Happy Election Day, everyone, if you're living in the beautiful state of New Jersey out there. Beautiful. If you're living in New Jersey, don't hate me for that one. If you're living in Virginia, happy Election Day for you guys, folks over there. New York City, yikes, that's a mess. So we'll just leave it at that. But folks, it's a big day all around the country for these major elections. Obviously, people taking to the polls. I was watching Sovereign Madani and his so-called wife cast their votes. And it's not looking good for New York. But we're keeping our eye on all things related to that. Roger Stone is going to be joining us in the second hour of the program, second half of the second hour. So we'll keep our eyes open for that. Also, Ken Silva joining the show today because I've got the actual criminal complaint now. I've been asking about this and we finally got it. We have the criminal complaint related to that so-called ISIS-inspired terror plot. Now, remember, we ended Friday's show talking about it. We didn't have all the information. Well, we now have the information. And it's interesting. It's very, very interesting. So again, I found, and I haven't heard anyone else talk about it, possibly the LGBT rainbow community was actually the target in all of this. On page 40 of the criminal complaint, it specifically says that many of the clubs that these individuals visited and bars in the area intentionally attracted members of the LGBTQ plus community. Interesting how everyone left that out. Very, very interesting. Folks, so a lot else things happening and going on all around the world today. We're excited that you're joining us, of course. Matthew Marsden is going to be joining the show today because, you know, we're going through, and this is Mel Kay who actually flagged it for me, the AutoPen report that came out last week, and Steven Spielberg's name popped up. If you're wondering why, that's because Steven Spielberg, according to the doc, was working and coaching Joe Biden for his State of the Union speech. Remember when he was like screaming like that demonic demon on stage? Well, apparently that was thanks to Steven Spielberg. But it's not just that. Also, George Clooney's coming clean and saying that the party itself really effed up by making Kamala Harris their front runner. He actually says that he wanted a primary. That's interesting, given the fact that George Clooney was a top donor. So again, we'll discuss that. Mark Mitchell also joining the show. There's not much in the way of polls out right now. I think Real Clear has something out right now, but in regards to Election Day, we don't really have much in the way of data. But we do have data in regards to how young people feel about Israel. We do have data about how folks at home feel about marriage, and it's actually a really important poll that he just dropped on that front. And there's a couple other polls that he has been releasing and talking about, which I actually think is fascinating. Like one poll where 52% of voters believe that Joe Biden's aides should be criminally prosecuted for unauthorized actions during his administration. So he'll be joining us to discuss just that. Again, President Trump advocating to get rid of the filibuster. It's very controversial. It's very controversial. Also, remember when just right after Charlie Kirk was assassinated, there was that so-called explosive planted under a Fox News van. It was a local news affiliate, but it was planted under the van. Well, according to Ken Silva, and he's going to be on the show to break it down, there's more details. It's not what it seems like. It's not what it seems like. And again, this is was kind of the head scratcher in all of this. We played that clip for, I think it was 2 weeks ago, of the court interactions where the judge is like, what's going on here? They haven't been charged with anything on a federal level. But remember, they came out and they tarnished these individuals' names, these two people. So again, it's quite strange, but Ken Silva joining us in just a few moments to break that down for us, which I always look forward to. And also, House Democrats want to visit the prison where Ghislaine Maxwell is staying. They want to talk to her. I don't think they did that for, what, the last 4 years when Joe Biden was occupying the White House, but now they're interested. Now they're interested. So there's a lot to dive into today, so don't go anywhere. Folks, I want to remind you all to head on over right now to the alexjonesstore.com. We're kicking off those Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales very, very early. You could snag 25% off site-wide right now. Methylene Red was just added, of course, to the shop just a few days ago. So head on over and grab yourself some of that. Also, we have some great hoodies, and they make great stocking stuffers. Head on over to the alexjonesstore.com and enjoy the 25% off site-wide sale going on right now.
Hey, the Alex Jones app, AJN Live, is now the number one app in the world. That's right, you heard me. We're number one. And this is pissing off the Democrats in the deep state big time. They're doing everything they can to shut us down, and now here we are, dominating the Apple Store.
Smells like victory.
We just launched the app less than 2 days ago, and we're already the number one news app in the world. And we'd like to keep it that way, so if you haven't done so yet, now's your chance. Go to alexjonesapp.com and download the app and tell the globalists to go f*** themselves.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the American Journal. I'm excited that you're all joining us today. Happy Election Day. If you live in New Jersey or Virginia or New York City, we're praying for you, especially if you live in New York City. It is a communist jihad takeover. And sadly, things aren't looking good. President Trump sounding off on Truth Social about that. And a couple of other things, too, but mainly that. Zohran Mahdani, although he said he was going to stay out of the race, is an absolute disaster. And so President Trump weighing in on that. But there's a couple other things that we got to get to. Can't just all be about elections. We got to talk about what's going on all around the country. We concluded Friday's show with a tweet from the FBI director, Kash Patel, that had no details, no press conference, no press release, no nothing. It was in regards to an alleged ISIS-inspired terror plot. Now, the individuals who have been arrested and charged are, we're just hearing two names. That's all we know is, you know, two names. We know that there's a minor also involved in this. So that's why their name's not being listed. We don't know what the charges they're facing are because they always hide and protect minors, even if they're accused of egregious crimes. But here we have the criminal complaint. Finally, it's a little over 75 pages, I believe, and it was dropped yesterday, and I was digging through this. Rushing, trying to figure out what the heck the FBI had here. And so far, there's about 10 people who are listed throughout this. And we don't know their names on a lot of these people. So we don't know if they're FBI informants in certain angles. We do know that there was an individual who was involved in the FBI and they are listed in here. But again, you don't see the names. They always take those names out. They don't expose their sources, but I'm just going through it all, and it's co-conspirator 1, 2, 3, 4. Ultimately, what we have here, folks, is that it looks like so far that these individuals were heading to places like Turkey, Syria. They wanted to join ISIS. They wanted to, according to the federal government, kind of smooth over their alliance. And it looks like, according to page 40, they were looking for areas potentially of what they were going to target. Now, they were looking to do this either on Halloween or on Halloween weekend, and they were looking to hit up some bars. Now, according to the criminal complaints, many of the clubs and bars in this area intentionally attract members of the LGBTQ community. Huh. You mean Muhammad was going to go after there and try to potentially kill members of the rainbow community? Well, folks, if you are in New York City, that's probably something you'd want to push because there are so many members of that community who are aligning with Zohran Mahdani, and they don't realize that they don't like you. Joining me to discuss is Ken Silva. He's one of the incredible people over at Headline USA. USA, just named you as my bank, Ken. But it's incredible to have you on the show today. We're excited to have you here. You have done the digging through all of this. I know I've been trying to follow it through. I thought it was very interesting, although they don't say clearly whether or not these LGBTQ bars were the targets. They do specifically say that they were visiting these areas. And so that has me asking a lot of questions. But you've gone through this whole document. And again, it's north of like 70 something pages. What are you learning here?
Yeah, I've gone through the complaint several times and it's very convoluted, hard to see exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. But let's just, you know, take a step back and put it in the broader context that Director Kash Patel announced this Friday morning. He had been taking heat all week about stories of him using the FBI's Gulfstream jet during the government shutdown to kind of gallivant around the country, go to, you know, country music concerts, visit his girlfriend. And a lot of people thought that he announced this case prematurely as a PR tactic to take the pressure off of him. Some people even have compared this case to sort of the Whitmer Fednapping plot. And I definitely wouldn't go that far. You know, like, unlike a fantastical and elaborate plot to kidnap a sitting governor, it's much simpler and more plausible just for some deranged people to shoot up some nightclubs with an AR-15. And, you know, we've seen this happen in the past. And to steal the FBI's evidence, we do have these two men, Muhammad Ali and Maqjed Mahmoud. They were associating with people who were planning to fight with ISIS overseas. They were buying rifles, ammunition, dozens of magazines, body armor, and other equipment. And perhaps most suspiciously, according to the complaint, they were talking in code in chat rooms, constantly discussing, are we going to do the pumpkin? And the FBI says that doing the pumpkin was code for committing a mass shooting on Halloween. That said, the FBI has not yet presented evidence that it would anywhere near support Kash Patel's really extravagant complaints about stopping a mass shooting. And the reason I could say that so confidently is because these two men are not charged with conspiracy to commit murder or terrorism or a mass shooting or anything that serious. They are charged with, quote, receiving or transferring firearms or ammunition that would be used to commit a federal crime. And in this case, the federal crime is conspiring to provide material support or resources to ISIS. So nowhere in that complaint do you see specifically, you know, alleged conspiracy to commit a mass shooting. Other material support cases include if people send cryptocurrency overseas to ISIS, they get charged with similar crimes. This only carries 15 years in prison. So again, it does not support Kash Patel's complaint. And, you know, if you read through this, it, like I said, it's very convoluted. There are at least 10 people in this supposed plot. There's Muhammad Ali and Mahmoud Majud. There's five uncharged and unnamed co-conspirators. Two of them, co-conspirator one and three, are overseas. There's also a juvenile referred to as person one. There's an FBI informant, and there's an undercover agent. The best evidence that I read in the complaint that supports the theory that there could have actually been a mass shooting is conversations online between co-conspirators one, two, three, and then the undercover FBI agent and the informant who are recording these conversations. And in those chats, the co-conspirator one is saying that we're going to go overseas and fight for ISIS while Ali and Mahmoud stay in the U.S. and do something similar to Paris. And that's probably a reference to the 2015 ISIS mass shooting in Paris. But again, these conversations don't even include the two men who were charged. So it's total hearsay, and it seems kind of dubious to me. Some other just bizarre facts were that this unnamed juvenile was interviewed by the FBI in September 2024. He told them about being in Discord chats where he was being recruited as a potential mujahid or a holy warrior. Co-conspirator one was actually traveling back and forth between the U.S. and Turkey, where he would go to Syria. And when he came to the U.S. in August, he was interviewed by Customs and Border Protection. So I'm not saying there definitely wasn't anything going on and they weren't plotting a mass shooting, but we need to know a lot more facts. We need to know who these other co-conspirators were. Were they actually involved in the plot, or were they possibly cooperating with government? Because you got to remember, drawing it back to the Whitmer plot, one of the people, Steve Robeson, was initially enlisted as an unindicted co-conspirator, and he turned out to be one of the key FBI provocateurs in that plot. So we need a lot more information. And, you know, last thing I'll say is the broader geopolitical point, putting this case aside, is, of course, ISIS is sort of like a CIA creation. Remember in 2015 on the campaign trail in 2016, Trump would constantly say that Obama created ISIS. He's putting in pretty simplistic terms, but he's pretty much right. He was referring to Operation Timber Sycamore, where the CIA would provide radical jihad fighters in Syria with weapons and ammunition to overthrow Assad. And so even setting aside this case, even if it's totally legitimate, this is sort of a mess that the FBI is now cleaning up because it was created about 10 years ago by the CIA.
Yeah. And Ken, I want to jump on a couple of things that you made, a couple of points. You detailed Kash Patel's, when we saw it on our show, and I know it broke, the news broke, his tweet broke right before we went to air, but I was a little jarred because I saw the allegations he was facing regarding the jets being used. I want to just say, too, that whether you feel like it's acceptable that he uses that jet, whether he has the authority to use the jet for personal matters, the reality is he was very critical of the former FBI director, Christopher Wray, for using that private jet. Well, it's not really a jet, but it's what we're paying for, our taxpayer money. So it's not a private, what he's coughing up the cash. You and I are paying for him to use that. So I know that his media team, and a lot of them are good people, but that was their rebuttal, is that he's allowed to use it legally. Yeah, that's fine. But the reality of it is he was going after Christopher Wray. And he was even in one soundbite that Alex Jones actually played on this network. Was also talking about how he was going to use that to get the Epstein list. So again, now that we play these clips, it's kind of laughable given the fact that we've seen this massive turnaround, sadly, with the FBI director. So I wanted to mention that. And you also mentioned the FBI, their role in all of this. You know, when these two individuals were shooting at the range, and it's detailed in here, again, they legally, according to these documents, actually purchased their firearms. So, you know, I'm watching all of these rifles getting posted in this. And to me, it's just nothing of significance because they legally acquired these weapons. One of them, I believe it was Muhammad Ali, is the individual who according to them, had these firearms, but he legally got them. He was handed to him by the sheriff's office. The police also approved, I believe it was. So again, nothing to see there. But they're at the shooting range, and little do they know that there's two FBI agents who are also at the shooting range with them as well. I saw that in the report, and I thought that was very, very interesting. These FBI agents just wearing plain clothes. They are there next to them. They obviously don't put their name in there. They don't put their faces in there when it comes to trial, though they might actually have to get on the stand because they have the right to face their accuser, of course. So there's that also. I don't know how my Second Amendment friends feel about this, but the place where they were purchasing these firearms from, an employee of the location voluntarily provided the FBI with a copy of the sales receipts. It's a little cringe. I get it, right? We think that these are terrorists, but again, when does this end? This usually is just a launching pad. But I also wanted to talk about, it looks like, and can I get your take on this? I noticed this on the cover, and maybe you could help detail this for me a bit. It says that receiving and transferring and attempting to conspire to transfer firearms and ammunition, knowing that having reasonable cause to believe that the firearms and ammunition would be used to commit a federal crime of terrorism. So you're saying that even though in the offensive description that we see here right now, that they have not charged these individuals with terrorism. Is that true?
That's correct. Well, it's buying these guns to commit a federal crime of terrorism. But if you read the complaint, it says, namely, attempting and conspiring to provide material support or resources to ISIS. So That is a terrorism charge. But what I'm saying is they weren't specifically charged with conspiracy to commit murder or a mass shooting, which, you know, could potentially send you to prison for decades. This is a charge that would carry a maximum of 15 years. They probably wouldn't get the maximum even if they're convicted. So I guess my point is that it does seem that they were involved with some sketchy people and with some pro-ISIS people, but it just doesn't match the sensationalistic headlines that Kash Patel generated on Friday.
Yeah, and that's a key point too in all of this. And I also thought it was really interesting, and maybe you have some more details on this, because I know you've been doing the deep digging into this, but one of the defendants, I'm trying to find the page, it's very extensive. One of the individuals left the country, then came back in, and then Customs and Border Patrol on one of the pages ultimately said that they actually went through its phone and they did see communications regarding a potential terror plot. And they even saw, I believe it was like him wearing armor or something related to that. I'm trying to pull up the page right now, but I got lost in all of this. Can you give us a little bit of background on that, the interaction this individual had? Because, I mean, we're hearing that they traveled out of the country and they had plans to go to Turkey and Syria. Did they ever go to those locations? Again, I only see that they traveled out of the country. It doesn't specifically say if they ever made it to the region, I think.
Well, yeah, you're referring to co-conspirator one, who actually at one point he was living at that house that was raided on Friday, and he had been traveling back and forth and talking about going to Turkey and crossing the border into Syria to fight for ISIS. We don't have a whole lot of evidence to show exactly what was going on. And it seems to me, you know, why hasn't this guy been arrested? He's the one who's on supposedly these recorded conversations with the FBI informant talking about fighting for ISIS while these other two guys were supposed to be committing a mass shooting. Well, that's a crime. Going to fight for ISIS is, again, would fall under this material support charge. So why wasn't he arrested? Is he cooperating with the government? You know, that's speculation, but considering some of these other cases we've seen, it's perfectly reasonable to ask these questions. And you brought the overseas element is also troubling because now the FBI would be able to classify a lot of its evidence and not even present it in court. We saw that with the Ryan Ruth case. We saw that with other cases that have like these overseas connections. So unlike the Whitmer case, where none of the evidence was classified, we got to see all the discovery. We got to see the provocateuring by the FBI. They might be able to hide a lot of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even think of that element, and I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I found it on page 9, what I was just telling our audience about in regards to the Customs and Border Patrol agent going through their device or this one individual's device when he came back into the country and then saying that the phone revealed Google searches related to ISIS and the Islamic State. I don't know how serious you are for Googling what ISIS is on Google, but again, we're going to sit back and watch, Ken, because I think this is going to be an interesting case as it plays out. And I think you're spot on when you're talking about what the director allegedly did. And he has a habit of releasing things too soon. You know, I didn't want to bury him completely. I was very excited when he announced that the whistleblowers are coming back. But then when I reached out to their attorneys for comments, I was told that they were literally on the phone with the DOJ at the time, and there was no deal that was finalized. And the deal was finalized like a week later. And then we saw what happened with Charlie Kirk's assassination. Sadly, he flagged someone as a suspect when they in fact weren't. I hope he didn't destroy that guy's life. But again, this is something he has a habit of doing. And he knows better. He's an attorney. He's a former prosecutor. Like, this guy knows better. So again, I think he's just using this because, number one, he wants the PR praise. Oh, Cash Patel, you're doing such a great job. And then also it's a deflection mechanism. So we'll continue to follow that, of course. I wanted to also talk about this story that you have up right now on headlineusa.com. You guys are talking about how the House Oversight Committee ranking member, Jamie Raskin, is seeking answers as to why convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell is receiving special treatment in prison right now. And they're potentially looking to go visit and speak with her, it looks like. What the heck's going on here?
Yeah, cue up the jokes about sending the Democrats to jail. In this case, it's probably not what a lot of people are hoping for. But this all stems from actually a bombshell article that the Wall Street Journal published about a month ago, kind of detailing the preferential treatment that Ghislaine Maxwell is receiving in the prison camp in Bryan, Texas, where she was transferred to from a more, I think, a low security prison from Florida after her interview with the DOJ, where she said Trump did nothing wrong, Bill Clinton did nothing wrong, and Jeffrey Epstein definitely wasn't an intelligence asset, she immediately gets moved to like what's referred to as Club Fed. And according to the Wall Street Journal, they're actually locking down other inmates while she gets to go exercise and shower at night. They even locked down everybody in August so she could have this meeting in the prison chapel with some guests who we don't even know who these people are. And perhaps most disturbingly, some of the inmates who've spoken up about this to the media, they immediately gets transferred to a high security prison in Houston, which is a clear case of retaliation just for raising concerns about Maxwell, a convicted child abuser. So, you know, Jamie Raskin, obviously the Democrats are being very cynical and jumping on this issue, but, you know, he wrote a strongly worded letter demanding answers about who these mystery visitors to Ghislaine are, you know, why these other inmates are getting sent to high security prison. just because they're talking about Ghislaine and her preferential treatment. And he's raising some good questions, and hopefully he will get to send his staffers to this prison to possibly interview the guards, possibly interview the other inmates, and get to the bottom of this. Although, given the retaliation, if I were an inmate, I would not talk to Raskin's staffers because I would want to stay at Club Fed. I don't want to get transferred to, you know, a high security prison in Houston.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the Bureau of Prisons under new leadership is still retaliating against people. How shocking, how shocking. By the way, the Bureau of Prisons, folks, is ran by the DOJ. So there's that little fun note for you. I want to turn to something else, Ken. You have another update regarding the local Fox News van, the bomber. Now, we remember when we were told by the federal government that there was an explosive somehow planted under the van. Now, this happened after Charlie Kirk's assassination. We were quite confused, and it's been kind of a confusing story because there's been a lack of transparency from our federal government, and not just for us, but the people who are accused of these crimes as well. So you have an update. What is going on here?
Yeah, when you talked about Cash making premature announcements, this was another one, although it didn't come straight from Cash. It did. We still don't know why the two Pakistani nationals were initially they were arrested. The FBI searched their home. They found some sticks of dynamite. And then for some reason, they got linked to this alleged plot to bomb a Fox News van, which this occurred, I think, the day after Tyler Robinson, the alleged Kirk assassin, was arrested. A lot of the media was gathered outside of Tyler Robinson's family's home, and they had to be evacuated because, you know, 50 miles away in Salt Lake City, some people found this bomb underneath a Fox News van. Mm-hmm. Everybody jumped to conclusions and blamed these Pakistani guys. But then about a month later, they were cleared. And another man named Christopher Proctor was arrested and charged with the actual bombing. And now the interesting thing here is that if we're going to draw links to the Kirk case, this guy actually is a self-professed left-wing anarchist. He was kind of known. He's a 45-year-old who was playing in like a little indie band in the Salt Lake area. He's actually been on a podcast. His band's called The Modifiers, if anybody wants to check it out for some reason. But in the podcast, he talks about his band is very political. We're woke. We're woke as F. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on your show. He's also quoted saying there's got to be a revolution somewhere. They released text messages saying he's talking to someone else. Do you really want to do this with me? I am 100% serious and planning and doing recon stuff. And I definitely need help if you're willing. We don't know who this other person is. But again, this is a little bit of speculation, but it seems like he was a pretty radical left-wing guy who saw the Kirk assassination, saw the media buzz that was creating, and he kind of wanted to add that to the chaos because he wants to see society collapse and there to be some sort of revolution. So he's, you know, facing charges now, and I guess, so the real story, the truth is actually more interesting than this initial, you know, alleged Pakistani plot, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it's not surprising, again, our FBI, DOJ jumping ahead of everything. So it's not surprising at all. Ken, I want to thank you for jumping on the show with us today and helping us understand all of this, because a lot's happening and you help keep us in the loop. Give him a follow on X, JD_cashless. Folks, give him a follow right now. Ken, thank you for jumping on. I want to also remind our audience that we have an incredible sale right now on the alexjonesstore.com. We're kicking off Black Friday and Cyber Monday right now. A little early, but that's the best part about all of this. We're passing on the savings to you. It's 25% off site-wide right now. So you get things like Methylene Red, what we just launched earlier in the month, or last month, I guess I should say. We launched it. It's now for sale over at the alexjonesstore.com. Head on over there.
What out there could have an effect like methylene blue and synergistically work with it to boost it and supercharge it? So I got with Bigley. They've been making supplements long before I got with them. And I got with Chase, who's really smart. And I said, I want you to go to a couple of different formulators and ask them what you think's the best. Announcing, ladies and gentlemen, Ultra Methylene Red. Now, this bottle is three times the size of an Ultra Methylene Blue bottle because it's to have the formula, you got to have a lot more stuff in it. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is amazing. And It just came in yesterday. I took it with the methylene blue. Incredible workout today. Clarity, focus. It is so amazing. And it works with methylene blue, and it works without it. And unlike L4-methylene blue that you can't take if you're on a serotonin reuptake inhibitor or certain medications, nothing in this has any of those counterindications, but still consult your physician. But when you take it with ultramethylene blue, it just does synergistic things that are amazing. I mean, I had this idea like a month into methylene blue exploding. I said, we got to come out with something that's complementary or even better. This is the research from that. You can buy three bottles, get 25% off. Buy two bottles, get 20% off. Buy one bottle, get 15% off. And when you subscribe and you cancel any time, it locks it in at 50% off at thealexjonesstore.com. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen. And it's available right now exclusively, limited first run. A little more comes in a month, but they got a limited run. Chase, tell us about what is in Ultra Methylene Red.
Well, I got to tell you, I've never been prouder of a product launch than I am of this. I really had a heavy hand in this.
So we are officially the first company through the Alex Jones Store that's ever even invented or launched something like this called Methylene Red. So I'm incredibly proud. And so we put this together as both a methylene blue super enhancer, especially with the cognitive focus benefits, the mitochondria empowerment, and the brain dropping off an extra electron for the brain cells. But it's also an incredible standalone product. I mean, just to give you an example, Alex, one of our best sellers when we were still operating the InfoWars store was Ultra 12. And this has everything that Ultra 12 had in it. 206,000% your daily value of vitamin B12 through methylcobalamin. So this is all backed by studies, by the way. We looked very carefully into this. The P5P form of B6 that cranks out GABA, serotonin, and dopamine like a neurotransmitter factory. It's got 5,000 micrograms of neurological B12 that regrows damaged nerve cells and shields your memory from the brain drain agenda from the globalists. It's got 5 grams of TMG, a methyl donor juggernaut that recycles homocysteine, fueling DNA repair and detoxifying your brain. It's got acetyl L-carnitine in it. It's a brain-penetrating carnitine that floods your mitochondria with ATP, which is basically energy and reverses cognitive aging. It's got uridine monophosphate in it, the synaptogenesis rocket fuel that grows new dendritic spines and locks in razor-sharp memory, and just so much more. It's even got the CoQ10 in it, of course, which is huge, huge product that we've sold in different forms in the past. But this is the most impressive compilation of ingredients that I've ever seen in a supplement. I'm very proud that we launched it. I'm very proud that it's our second tincture on the market. And when I'm looking through these studies, I mean, here are the benefits that are listed: migraine prevention, cardiovascular health, antioxidant, cellular protection. We've got neurotransmitter synthesis and mood helps people with depression, according to these studies that I've looked at here. Even energy and fatigue reduction, more cardio production, cognitive support, mood cognition, endothelial function. I mean, it goes on and on. Nerve regeneration, cognitive and mood support.
So that's what you're getting with us, Ultramethylene Red. Everything we sell is the most insanely powerful, best thing we can come up with, because this is what we take, and it's common sense to want to sell somebody something that really works. So that's why everybody just raves and raves and raves about the products at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to the American Journal. I'm excited that you're all joining us today. I'm even more excited for my guest, who we'll bring in just a moment. Roger Stone is going to join us in just a second. A lot happening all around the country. It is election day, and if you live in New York City, not a good day if you live in New York City. As many of you guys know, as a former New Yorker, I have left the city. I've left Long Island completely. It's just devastating to sit back and watch. New York has completely crumbled. And it's because, of course, of bad leadership, but also there's really no opposition. The New York Republican Party has sadly been a massive disappointment in the state of New York. And so here we are today, preparing for a potential communist jihad to take over as the mayor of New York City. Him and his wife made their way this morning to cast their votes. And it's just absolutely devastating to sit back and watch. And most importantly, there's really no other option here. Sadly, so many are leaning on Andrew Cuomo, which I never thought in 1,000 years I'd actually have to say out loud. But we'll get those posts up in a little bit, because Elon Musk and both President Trump are telling voters that you have no other option. The Republican nominee is someone who does not have enough support to win. And they're saying that a a vote for Curtis Leewall, essentially the vote for Zohran Mamdani. And so they're throwing everything behind Andrew Cuomo right now, who is an independent who lost the primary in New York just a few weeks prior. So a lot happening there. Zohran Mamdani, though, getting called out by President Trump, who apparently was going to just not even weigh in on this election. But then it got really, really serious. And so the president is now trying his very best to save his former home state and city, of course. But Zohran Mamdani in clip 21 is responding to the president, who has gone after him with several Truth Social posts. Take a listen.
Donald Trump is threatened by our campaign. He's threatened by it because, like his, we've diagnosed the crisis in working-class New Yorkers' lives, the cost of living. But unlike him, we're actually going to deliver on that. And that is a contrast that he can't bear to see. Because while he is spending $300 million remodeling a White House ballroom, the same amount of money that could provide SNAP benefits for 100,000 New Yorkers, he's trying to make it harder for Americans across the country to actually afford groceries. And this money that we're talking about, it's money that New York City is owed. It's not Donald Trump's to decide which city or state will get what money. This is the money that New Yorkers are owed, and this is the money that we're going to fight for.
Okay, so
as you know, President Trump has threatened to pull federal funding if Zohran Mamdani is elected today, and that is what he's alluding to there. Joining me to discuss is Roger Stone. He is a political icon and obviously New York Times bestseller and so many other incredible things, and we're excited to have him on the program today to weigh in on so many important elections taking place all across the East Coast. So, Roger, thank you for jumping on with us. As a New Yorker, I'm not happy about this race. I don't want to be someone sitting here and saying I support Andrew Cuomo, but the reality is the numbers aren't siding with the Republican nominee, and this has a lot of people on edge right now. Even President Trump saying, you might not like Cuomo, but he's all we have right now. I know that you think he's going to lose, but I wanted to hear your take on all of this, because it's been very interesting, the back and forth between a lot of people who aren't siding with Cuomo either.
First of all, I need to address the massive lie just told in that clip by Zohran Mamdani. Donald Trump is personally funding out of his own pocket the ballroom. So that's not money that would go to New York City, but he lies so easily. He's very skillful at it. Secondarily, I'm afraid that Donald Trump, who I love, and Elon Musk, who I revere, just delivered the death blow to Andrew Cuomo. 71% of New Yorkers would be less likely to vote for a candidate endorsed by Donald Trump. But let's focus, if we may, on Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo is a man who not that long ago said, if you believe in the right to bear arms, if you aren't opposed to abortion, there is no place for you in New York State. The policies of Andrew Cuomo and the policies of Zohran Mamdani are essentially identical. The only difference is Mamdani would execute them much, much quicker. Andrew Cuomo, in all honesty, should be in prison at this moment, not for grabbing women, but for the number of deaths in the nursing homes in which he inserted known COVID patients. So I think Andrew Cuomo hates Donald Trump, said yesterday that ICE agents would never be allowed to perform their deportation arrests and duties if he were mayor. He's out of gas. He's out of ideas. He's old and he's tired. He's running for this office because, well, he's got money left over from his campaign for governor. Remember, he had to resign ahead of impeachment, and there was nothing else to run for. If you're a Republican, I can't see how you in good conscience can vote for Andrew Cuomo. Once again, his policies are identical to Mamdani's. He would just enact them a little more slowly. As for Curtis Sliwa, he's doubling the Republican registration in the city, which I would remind you, based on the demographic changes to the city, the Republican Party is at 10%. 10%. I actually thought it was 13. I was wrong. I had to check. So less than a quarter of the voters in New York City are Roman Catholics. This is a city that was once a majority Roman Catholic. The Hispanic population has risen to about a quarter of the vote. This is their whites are in a minority in the city at about 31%. This has to do a lot with the demographic changes. I think that the idea that Sliwa should have dropped out. Why? He won a Republican primary and he has a full slate of candidates running with him for the city council and for the civil court judgeships. The idea that votes are transferable, meaning if Sliwa dropped out, all of his votes would go to Cuomo. Or if Cuomo dropped off all of his votes to go to sleep, well, that is untrue. Republicans despise Andrew Cuomo with very good reason. He was a terrible governor. He's a terrible candidate, and he would be a terrible mayor.
Yeah, and Roger, I was actually just going to pull up a clip. I totally missed putting it on the show for today. I'll hopefully get that into us, though, in a little bit. But there's a Republican member of the city council who stood by Andrew Cuomo and endorsed Cuomo, and not because she agrees with him, but just simply saying that she just thinks that Cuomo is someone who could give them a seat at the table and possibly discuss all these issues with him. But, you know, I followed, that was my beat back in the day. I mean, I literally focused on Andrew Cuomo and all the horrible things he was doing in New York State. He doesn't care for Republicans. He doesn't give them a seat at the table. You know, he was someone who was so hell-bent on passing criminal justice reform that he actually shoved it into the 2019 state budget and then forced those lawmakers to vote on it by also placing that their raises in it as well. And, you know, and most people know they're very well versed on the nursing home scandal, that he was obviously the one who orchestrated that. But he also was behind the scenes doing a lot of pay-to-play schemes. There were so many of them that he was heavily involved in, and there were so many allegations being poured out there by the New York Post that did an incredible job on all of this. And there were zero criminal charges filed there. But also, more importantly, twice, congressional committees have referred him for criminal referrals to the DOJ, and no one has ever filed charges against him officially. But many believe that he lied to Congress when he did testify about the nursing home scandal. So there's so many elements to all of this that need to be addressed. I just don't understand, and maybe you can give us some insight into this, Roger. How are these the three best candidates for this position to run? Because, by the way, also, I missed this part, too. We played Steven Crowder, had some undercover footage of one of Zohran Mamdani's candidate, the canvassing director, who ultimately was out there saying that back in 2014, Zohran Mamdani was supposed to run for, or he was to plan that they were going to run him for the New York City mayor's office. But he wasn't even a U.S. citizen until 2018. So this has been well orchestrated. And both sides, both Democrats and Republicans, haven't been able to put up a candidate that could beat Zohran Mamdani with clear numbers.
Yeah, Andrew Cuomo is a straight-up gangster. Yeah. He's a thug. By the way, the fact that we have cashless bail, a no-cash bail system that's a revolving door for dangerous criminals, that is a law pushed and passed by Andrew Cuomo. Mm-hmm. The fact that Kathy Hochul, the worst governor in New York history, that was Andrew Cuomo's selection for lieutenant governor. He is responsible for the elevation of Kathy Hochul. So don't get any strange idea that Andrew Cuomo, who is rather charmless, and I think from an idea point of view, completely out of gas, is friendly to Donald Trump, who he's attacked repeatedly, or friendly to Republicans. I kind of believe in voting in the candidate that you believe in, that you share the values of, whether they're going to win or whether they're going to lose. I don't know why the president called on people to endorse or to vote for Mamdani or Elon Musk. I have to presume that they've gotten bad political advice, or perhaps someone around them cannot read a poll, because I don't think the endorsement is going to move any votes. If you love Donald Trump today, the odds are overwhelming that you're voting for Curtis Sliwa. It's also interesting to me, Brianna, I'm not sure you understand this. Andrew Cuomo is not capable of campaigning. He can't go out and actually meet people, because he's deathly afraid of that video that goes viral of someone saying, "Hey, you, my grandmother died in a nursing home because of you." He's deathly afraid of that moment. So like Joe Biden, he's campaigning from his basement.
Yeah, yeah. And we've seen that time and time again. And it's been pretty frustrating to sit back and watch. I don't know where New York's going to go from here. You know, I loved my former beloved and home city and Long Island as well. It just sadly, whatever happens in New York City leaks over to Long Island as well.
There is no, I think there is a silver lining here, and that is if Mamdani is elected mayor with a progressive majority on the city council, he defunds the police as he's promised to do. He raises taxes on white people, which he's promised to do. He tries to give away free everything. He nationalizes the grocery stores. New York will be a flaming wreck by the 26th election, which gives an excellent chance for Elise Stefanik, the likely Republican nominee for governor, to win the governorship, something that has not happened in decades in New York State. Today, she is only, according to the Emerson College poll, she's only trailing the horrific Kathy Hochul by 5 points. So I do think, very sadly, I feel badly for my friends who live in New York City. I do salute the friend that my good friend Frank Morano will win a city council seat on Staten Island, and he will be a thorn in Mamdani's side, constantly demanding the truth from the Ayatollah Mamdani. But I do think the governorship is very much within reach now, thanks to these events in New York City.
Yeah, well, we're going to be sitting back and watching, and we hope and pray that the best scenario plays out for New York. And I'm excited for the governor's race as well, because we finally, I think, have a legitimate shot at taking that back, and that would be amazing to see. I want to bring things to New Jersey, because obviously they're having governor's race themselves right now. Jack Chattarelli is someone who has risen in the pollings, the polling numbers that have come out, and it's been quite fascinating to sit back and watch. It seems like those in New Jersey are warming up to possibly having a governor that is a Republican. Do you think that's very likely to come about today?
I think it's very, very possible. I really think you have to look at several factors here. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump did not target New Jersey in the last presidential campaign. He really couldn't, on the basis of using his limited resources properly. But even without targeting, he only lost the state by 5 points. Now, in 2020, he putatively lost the state by 15 points. That shows that real grassroots volunteer operation, mostly spearheaded by my good friend Mike Crispy, was able to make it a close race with virtually no resources, or more precisely, resources that they raised themselves within the state. Chittarelli has run an excellent campaign. Once again, the Democrat nominee, Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill, she would fit better in Virginia than in New Jersey. She's from Morris County, a heavily Republican area of the state. She knows nothing whatsoever about state issues. She's a congresswoman. And it has shown in the debates. Essentially, her platform, if I may sum it up, is I hate Donald Trump, vote for me. Not very conducive in a state like New Jersey. And then there was the debate in which she was confronted with the fact that she had 3 separate stock trades that tripled her net worth, grabbing her a quick $7 million based solely on information she got as a member of the House Defense Appropriations Committee. Now, I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or not terribly political. You don't like crooks and you don't like corruption. And this was an epic example of corruption. When confronted about it, she said she couldn't remember whether she had made such a trade. I think if I made $7 million in one day, I'd probably remember it.
Yeah, you probably would remember. And I remember that interaction.
Chittarelli is a former state legislator who knows the issues, whether it is property taxes, whether it is crime, whether it is the school funding system in the Garden State. He understands state issues. She's rather aloof, knows nothing about state issues. The real question here is, of course, one of voter integrity. The election board in Passaic County, the chairman of the election board in Passaic County just happens to wear a second hat. He's also the Passaic County Democrat chairman. He says we can't have cameras in the area where paper ballots, right, mail-in ballots are counted, nor can we have sign-in sheets to tell us who is given access to that matter. Here's a message for the Passaic County Democrats. See you in court.
Yeah. Yeah, Roger, it's been interesting to sit back and to watch what's going on over there. And I remember vividly that those comments that she gave in regards to being grilled on that $7 million, and she pretended like she had no idea what was happening. You're spot on there. I wanted to get your take, too, before you go, about Virginia, because Virginia is also obviously another heated election. Abigail Spreadsburg is the Democrat nomination right now. And this has been very controversial. I know I was watching one of her campaign rallies, and she was going out there and telling folks that she will not work with President Trump, even when it comes to creating jobs for those who live in Virginia. And that seems to be what she's running on, and she's hoping that's a winning issue. Do you think that when Democrats like herself are running on just like kind of the stance that we're not going to create jobs if President Trump is involved at any point, do you think that's a winning issue for those in Virginia?
I don't. Once again, she kind of reminds me of Mikey Sherrill, aloof, arrogant, kind of an elitist. Secondarily, let's recall that the real issue here, which no one wants to talk about, is the fact that the Democrat candidate for attorney general was caught saying that he wants to shoot his Republican opponent in the head and kill his entire family. Now, you would think that such a candidate would be forced to drop out of the race, but Spanberger has refused to denounce him, as has all of the corrupt Democrats in the state of Virginia. And Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears has made, I think, a lot of hay on that issue. It's an issue of common decency. I mean, it's kind of like the insider trading issue in New Jersey. It's not a partisan issue. Whether you're a conservative or a liberal or non-political, no one likes corruption. Well, nobody likes violence in politics. And the arrogance of Spanberger, who just kind of stands there in the debate, refuses to denounce her running mate's call for violence, I think hurt her very badly. Now, these are both states, I have to point out, New Jersey and Virginia, where the demographic trend has been against us. But I do think victory is within grasp. I think New Jersey, I'm concerned about the vote counting in Newark and Camden and Essex County and Passaic. I hope they have attorneys standing by. New Jersey's famous for voter theft and voter fraud. Mm-hmm. But I have a feeling that the momentum is with Jack Cittarelli, and I believe he is going to win. I also think Virginia is possible. Winsome Sears certainly within range, running against the former CIA operative Spanberger.
Yeah. Well, we're sitting back and we're watching, and it's going to be an interesting night tonight when the votes start pouring in. So we're hoping for the best, but we're preparing for the worst, especially if we're talking about New York City. Roger Stone, I want to thank you for jumping on with us today to give us your insight on all of this. We greatly appreciate your time as always. If you haven't done so already, which I'm sure you probably have, but go over to X and give him a follow at Roger Stone Jr. There's a J in between there, too. It looks like my eyesight's not going too well. Thank you, Roger, for jumping on with us today. We appreciate it.
Roger J. Stone Jr. God bless you. Many thanks, Brianna.
Thank you, Roger. We appreciate you. And yeah, I'm getting up there these days, so my eyes are not the way they used to be. So thank you, Roger. Folks, I wanted to bring your attention to something I just reached out to DHS about. It's in regards to Sarah Adams. She just posted what she's claiming to be an ISIS threat. And it's quite strange. So, and obviously, folks, if you're unfamiliar, we have her on this show quite often. Sarah Adams is a former CIA employee, but she's outlining that ISIS is threatening to unleash its jihadists onto New York City today. Now, the letter itself is quite strange, claiming, and they put this in bold, that we've learned our mistakes during the operations of Paris and Brussels, and we were able to introduce and deliver open source jihadist instructions to 109 Muslim brothers living in America who express desire to commit and enable today's jihad. So again, I don't know what they're specifically talking about here. I reached out to DHS to find out if this is authentic because it seems quite strange. But then again, nothing strange these days. Oh, it looks like, sorry about that. So it looks like it says that the date on top is, it happened earlier this year. And so this is an old ISIS style write-up. So again, I'm looking to see if there's something going on here. It's quite strange. It's actually at the bottom. So this says the date is at the bottom of this. I've reached out, but this is why it's so interesting that this is happening right now, because there's bomb threats that are being made in regards to the polling sites. Now, we talked about New Jersey in just a few moments ago. We talked about New Jersey, but specifically, apparently this is also happening across elections across the country right now. Zohran Mahdani weighed in on all of this. Take a listen.
Incredibly concerning. And I think that it is an illustration of the attacks we're seeing on our democracy. Sometimes they're blatant and explicit in the manner of these bomb threats. And we have to understand this as part of the general approach the Trump administration has taken to trying to intimidate voters with baseless allegations of voter fraud as a means of trying to repress the voice of Americans across this country.
I don't know if he's going to get that question again today, but the general approach the Trump administration has taken to try and intimidate voters, unless we heard him incorrectly. Yeah. What in the world is he talking about?
He is serving up a Kamala-sized word salad, but he's using kale instead of romaine. It's just a slightly better finessed verbiage than we were given with her. This is emptiness. It means nothing. Mm-hmm. What he's doing is deflecting because he doesn't have an answer for this because he is not prepared if, God forbid, something like 9/11 happens again. Just think about that. Were you in New York on 9/11? Do you remember what happened to this city? Do you remember what happened to this country? Do you remember who was mayor and what was needed from that office? Could this person really provide that? I mean, it scares the hell out of me. I hope everyone has a plan with their kids if, God forbid, something happens.
Got it.
You have to keep in mind, again, I'm going to highlight the fact that a lot of this these bomb threats are usually foreign, obviously, but they do this intentionally to stop people from going out to vote. So we've got DHS. I guess we got a question out for DHS right now in regards to that tweet and that post. I just want to see if it's authentic. Obviously, they probably have had some time to vet this, but I think it's quite interesting when we sit back and watch all of this kind of unravel. Again, I don't want you guys to not go out and vote if you live in these cities and states that are having elections today. I just want you to be aware of what's happening and just, you know, pay attention to your surroundings. I think that's really, really important in situations like this, is to be alert. And so that's what I would tell you to do. I would tell you to still go out and vote. Don't allow this to deter you from going out to vote, but you know, just make sure you do that. Okay, I want to turn to something else. Nancy Pelosi is very likely going to announce that she's not running for re-election. We're waiting for that. Sources close to Pelosi say that the 85-year-old woman, okay, this is why we need term limits so badly. Apparently, she's planning to retire next year from politics. Wow, that's so nice of her. At 85, she's looking to step away from politics. According to many, of course, Pelosi is not doing too well. We've seen so many interviews of her where she is unable to speak. The dentures in her mouth look like and sound like they're falling out of her mouth these days. And let's be honest, folks, she is just done. She is done. I want to take a listen to clip 10, because in clip 10, she is saying that President Trump is the worst person ever, and she's just so unhinged. Take a listen.
He's just a vile creature. The worst thing on the face of the earth. But anyway.
You think he's the worst thing on the face of the earth?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Why is that?
Because he's the president of the United States, and he does not honor the Constitution of the United States. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's turned the Supreme Court into a rogue court. He's abolished the House of Representatives. Mm-hmm.
He's abolished the House of Representatives. Where the heck was I for that? Oh, Pelosi. Must have been happy hour somewhere where they taped that. But the reality of it is Nancy Pelosi is very unhinged, and she does not like the fact that Donald Trump is doing what he promised the American people he was going to do. And so Pelosi, unhinged, has to throw, I guess, just slanderous accusations against President Trump, because nothing else seems to land these days. Folks, I want to remind you to head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. We have our Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales going on right now. We thought we'd give you a head start on all of this. So head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. It is 25% off site-wide. Got so many incredible items over there. Methylene Red, we just added that to the team over at the site. So head on over there, get yourself some of that. Also pair it with the Methylene Blue as well. We appreciate it when you do. Of course, you're supporting us, but most importantly, you're helping your own personal health. So head on over to thealexjonesstore.com and make sure you do just that. If you haven't done so already either, go to alexjonesapp.com and download the app. It's how you stay in touch with us with whatever happens as well. So head on over to the App Store and do just that. All right, more to discuss in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Quick, I just wanted to plug the Methylene Blue. I'm a new supplement buyer from Alex Jones Store, and I keep hearing people talking about the Methylene Blue, and I'm like, you know what? I don't know what the hype is all about, but I definitely want to try it. And what I noticed is I didn't get the sensations that a lot of the other people said that they got, you know, like the tingling fingers and like this, you know, euphoria. But I do have an ample amount of energy, and I'm disabled, so I'm a housewife, and whenever you're at home, day in and day out, 7 days a week, it really tends to drag after some time. And there were things that I wasn't doing around the house that I should have. But now I'm getting things done like really quick. I have all this extra time on my hands now. And I really think it's the Methylene Blue that's been giving me the energy. And it's so funny because now like my silly husband's calling me a meth head, which is hilarious. But yeah, so I'm going to stick on that. And I actually have some bovine coming in today, so I can't wait to try that out. I'm also going to give that to my dog because, you know, I need a lot of help too. And I brought online that's really good for your dog if you give them like a small little amount of food. So I'm going to do that. But yeah, I just thought I would tell you guys about my experience with this so far. So,
well, Jen, thank you. That's amazing to hear, and we love to hear that, honestly. I mean, that's the reason why Alex has created the shop, so people can get you know, get healthier and not be relying on big pharmaceutical companies, but instead take control of their health. So that's good to hear. You know, I fluctuated weight-wise too. And so finding something that works is really important. And not to get hooked on those, like, high caffeine, insane chemicals, energy drinks, which so much of us have relied on over the years. I literally was getting anxiety from one of them. And so I too am on the blue these days. So I guess your husband would call me a meth head, but it's good to hear from you, Jen. I love it. I think it's great. And I love to hear from you as well.